Thanks again, Tim. It's Red. Hope to open the meeting. Just like to take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors. Massive welcome to anyone that might be new to Narcotics Anonymous for to see us this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that will encourage you to keep coming back. Okay, like we said, we are a speaker meeting. I'm delighted to say that we do have a speaker tonight who's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. The journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous for the next 40, 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And I'm going to hand you over to Lenny, who I believe is going to introduce them. So, Lenny, over to you. Just unmute yourself.
Can I come on camera, Steve?
No, this is audio only, friend, my friend. So that's good.
Audio. Okay. Okay. All right. I'll go with that.
Cool.
Hi, family. Lenny B. Grateful for Recovering Addicts.
Hello,
Hey,
Lenny.
Lenny.
Hey,
Hey, Lenny.
family. That is me in the white shirt, and it says sponsors. That is me. This is my partner, the mother of my children, a newcomer. My best friend for 24 years. Hope you always tell her you get a minute a fucking year, Jamie. I always tell her that. So you get 24 minutes. I don't know why you guys said 40. I love you, boo. Hey, do God's work. Go 40 if you just play with you, boo. But this is my wife and my partner, the mother of my children, addict with a lot of clean time. Go get him, Jamie.
Thank you, Lenny.
It's Lenny.
Thank you, Lenny. My name's Jamie, and I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hi,
Jamie.
Jamie.
Welcome. Glad you're
Welcome.
with us.
Thank you. My clean date is September 20th, 2001. My home group is Wheel of Recovery, meets on Thursday night in Star, Idaho, USA. If you're ever in my neck of the hood, love to see you. Let's see. Yeah, experience, strength, and hope. So our literature says that's all we have to share. I don't have any advice. I just have a bunch of lessons that were passed down to me, and that I had to learn some of them the hard way, right? I got into recovery at 21 years old. A blessing and a curse. I had all those old people who must have spilled a lot of dope, because they would joke about how they spilled more dope than I've ever used. But I was able to look past those little comments and sit back and obviously hear what I needed to hear in order to stay for these 24 years. I'm a big believer on clean time is very important, but it does not equal recovery. So if you hear me explaining any of the struggles that I'm going through at 24 years clean, don't worry, you don't have to go through them if you do the work before I did the work. So what I love about this program is I'm never done changing and growing. When I first picked up, I remember always being in a state. I was very, very much an ADD child, and you'll hear that throughout my whole share. I'll bounce all around. Those of you that can keep up, great. Those that you can't, what they say, eat the chicken, leave the bone. Take what you can and leave the rest. I had this very ADD mind and very self-critical, so many negative thoughts about myself, always second guessing what I was thinking, saying, and doing. Never really thought people actually liked me. Tried to buy a lot of friendships, or people please, I guess is what we call it. I remember working a step one time and being like, I don't have some of these defects. I'm not manipulative. And they go, people pleasing is manipulative. And I'm like, what? I'm doing things so that you'll like me. That's something. And I was like, oh, I did not see that. So anyway, I had all these things going on. And the first time I used my drug of choice, it's like the first time my brain silenced and I didn't care what anybody thought. And it opened up this world to me that felt really cool. However, that feeling did not last. Luckily, my end happened a lot quicker than it could have. By the time, I went through about 8 months of being forced by my parents to come into these rooms if I wanted a roof over my head. And I would come and I would listen, and ended up kind of treating it a little bit like a game. And I remember there being this one guy that jarred me and said, "Sit down and shut up. We're trying to save our lives here." Oh, that guy was the asshole of my story for 17 years until I was sitting in an after meeting at a restaurant, and I told that story about how I still have that resentment. And someone said, "But did you change?" And at that moment, I realized that guy was one of the people that helped save my life. The women that came up afterwards and told me, "Oh, he's just an asshole, don't mind him, blah, 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 blah," they saved my life too, right? I needed it all. I needed that truth bullet that this is serious. And if it wasn't serious for me, fine, but it was serious for other people. And so at that time, I got to start sitting back and listening. And most of my thoughts were, I would never do that. I would hear a woman share, and I was like, I'd never do that. And they would talk about these yets, you're eligible too. And it seemed like the disease of addiction, once getting the solution, progressed rapidly. And after sitting in the meeting saying, I would never do that, and using, I was noticing that I basically have been or am doing that, and it's getting worse. And so for the first time, I kind of saw the addiction part of the disease, right? Not the I'm just having fun. If it wasn't illegal, if my parents were off my back, if all of these things, if there was just enough, if people showed up when they were supposed to, like everything else was other people's fault, not the drug's fault. And so, but for the first time, I kind of saw I was doing things I didn't want to do. And then I started trying to get that 30 days because they made me raise my hand in every single meeting. And it felt like months I was raising my hand for under 30 days. Remember the first time I got to get a 30-day key tag? I had started having some hope and joy and spirit back into my life. And I thought, because I'm unique, right? Like all the things you guys told me, I thought I could go hang out with a friend, my drug dealer, and not use. And I remember to this day, and I share it every time because it helps me remember what really is on the line. It took me 7 seconds, and I was using, and I literally could feel that hope, joy, spirit flush from my body. It was like a whoosh. That's really all I can remember. I remember that spiritual bankruptcy that instantly returned. Not everybody, I was actually raised with a very loving, kind, forgiving, protecting God. And so I didn't have this concept when I came in here of having a vengeful or hateful or, judging God, but I do remember it like feeling like a separation. Choosing that lifestyle, because it was more than just the use of drugs. It was that whole lifestyle, the scheming, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, the trying to come up doing dirty things. And so, all of that was instantly returned to me. I don't remember if that's the last time I used, but that was the last time I relapsed, if that makes sense. So I started taking a little bit more serious, but I wasn't 100%. And my parents were getting ready to go do a missionary trip outside of the United States. And I had thought that if I go into this rehab and they leave, that once they're gone, all that guilt that I have for, hurting my mom, her worrying about where I am, running around the streets of Oakland, thinking of, not even thinking about my safety. So crazy. When I look back, it's not who I am anymore, or who I want to be. I was raised in an environment where, I had aspired to be somebody's old lady and like this kingpin or something, and like all of that lifestyle used to really appeal to me. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't. There's no way I'd want that. That's not who I am anymore. And it's, man, I'm all over the place. But so I came into the, I went into a treatment center with every intention of using when I got out. And And I remember being in there, and my dad came to visit, and I've never really had a close relationship with my dad, but he's a very smart, intelligent man, psychiatrist, and I was asking him about, like, well, am I an addict, or did I just, is it the drugs? And he said, well, if you're not an addict, you should have no problem never using again. I'm like, well, what's the way I get to use again? What's the way I get to, And I was starting to future trip about, well, what about my wedding day? I can't have this. And all of this stuff, which is so funny because fast forward, I don't know, several years later, my husband that I got is in recovery. All of our friends are in recovery, and not one time did I think I was missing anything at my wedding day. So I was sitting there, and something ended up clicking in our literature. It says that we never have to use again. And when that have to clicked, because when I was in there, I started seeing what my life really was. For a long time, I thought I was just having fun until my life kicked off, until I got married and had children and was this little, stay-at-home mom doing all this stuff and white picket fence and all that. But nothing in my life I was doing was going to get me there. And so I just saw the insanity of doing the same thing day in and day out and calling it fun. Fun was far and few between, if you could even call it that. So that have to clicked in my mind. I never have to use. It's not that I can't. It's not that I shouldn't. It's not that it's illegal that my mom or dad or whatever it is on my case. It's that I don't have to. I don't have to live that life. So when I was getting ready to leave that program, there was actually a woman that was opening up a clean and sober living environment, and she came in, and I was one of her first clients, I guess you call it. Anyway, so lucky to have my family support paying for this $500 bed back in early 2000s, and I got to start living in a house full of women. I remember the first night pass I got. I lied about where I was going to be. I went to meet up with my boyfriend, or I never know what he is at the time, the obsession of my life for back then, and snuck into his clean and sober living environment, stayed the night there, had no way of getting back in time, was supposed to meet somebody that morning, and it's just like my life became unmanageable again. And I remember walking through that door and them calling me out on it. And they say, we know you weren't where you were supposed to be. We want you to take a drug test. And I knew in that moment, I felt like I had used. My actions had made me feel dirty, the lying, the scheming, and all of that. And that's really important for me to remember too, because, in 24 years, I think I'm a pretty honest person, but in early recovery, I had to be 100% honest. There wasn't any of these white lies because it felt dirty. It felt like I was doing something wrong. I got a sponsor. We went to meetings, and I got involved. I still had all those thoughts that, like, what I was saying was stupid, or people didn't really like me. I was bothering people, and I wish I could say that I worked through all the steps and like allowed myself to heal. But no, what I did is I did the three-step shuffle. One, two, three, get a new sponsor. One, two, three, get a new sponsor. I finally did settle on one sponsor, and I started working on the four-step. Because I was 21, and because I started judging myself based on what it says in our literature, right? Like our visions of what an addict was. I didn't think I had brought up enough dirt. I didn't think I had put enough names down, and I just sat on that four step until it really wasn't even working on it anymore. It was just put away. And I continue to go to meetings, continue to be of service, continue to build my relationship with God, continue to learn these spiritual principles. And my life was definitely more manageable. The external unmanageability was really taken care of, right? I wasn't losing jobs. I wasn't breaking relationships down as much. You know, character defects still had some of those not go perfectly, but sorry. I got to kind of learn a lot of great things. You know, my sponsor would have me call them every day, and she had me memorize her number. She didn't want me to put her in my phone. Cell phones were out then. Texting wasn't really still a big thing because you had to press three buttons to get the letter C. But anyway, so I still have her number memorized today. I don't know any of my friends' numbers by heart, but I remember that. And so I was like, that's really cool. So if I never did lose my cell phone, but if I did, I had my sponsor's number, and that was real important. And I'd call her every morning, and we'd go through my plans and my thoughts and what I was doing. And it was very helpful for me because I don't know what I don't know. I don't know what is a dangerous situation. And what I appreciated about it was that she would help me come up with plans. So when I did start getting a job, and going to these work events, and like, there's going to be alcohol at this event, but it's a work event, I need to be there. You know, she would help me safeguard that event. Well, okay, call me before you go into it. Know that you could step out at any time. Have people lined up that know they might receive an emergency call from you, and then call me after. And you know, I never had to step out for an emergency call, but even just knowing that I had somebody I was accountable to, I think really helped me. I was going to let them know I was going into the situation. I knew there was a solution if I was in it, and that I called after. And that was huge for me. And so I went to meetings, and I listened. I listened to the people that would come in and share their relapse stories, because you see it a lot. You see this hope, this light, this joy, this life being built back up, this appreciation for Narcotics Anonymous, for the program, for the fellowship. And then you see that one thing that happens and that light go out, right? And someone relapse and return. So I listen to what happens. A lot of the time is I put work ahead of my recovery. I stopped going to meetings. Thought I could hang out here. I was able to hang out here for a very long time until one day it didn't work for me anymore, and I picked up, you know, and so I started realizing like how insidious this disease is, and cunning, I think it's used in our literature too. cunning this disease is, and I started treating it like almost like something I really needed to guard against, and I'm so grateful for that foundation of knowing that I'm an addict, and knowing that if I were to ever use anything, that I do not necessarily have the control of when I'm going to come back, and because I've seen it in so many people, and so I kept listening, and I then ended up meeting this man who happens to be in this meeting. I think I had about a year clean when we officially started kind of dating, but we had been talking before that on the phone a lot and sharing a lot of stuff, and his excitement for recovery was contagious, right? And he just loves the program, loves the fellowship, and just loves sharing about recovery. And one of the things I love most about him is he really didn't care what anybody thought about him. And I'm like, man, I would love that, because that's all I did. I always cared how I was being perceived, or people judging me, all of this stuff, right? And the f most funny thing is, though, in our relationship, the number one thing that had been a problem for a long time was he didn't care what people thought about him. So yeah, I ended up getting in this relationship, and I was gonna move. So I moved from the little clean and sober living house to like a secondary place. And I called my sponsor, and Lenny had asked me to move in with him. And I had told her, and she said, "I don't think that's a good idea." She says, "I think you should finish working your fourth and fifth step, and you should work some steps and get to know who you are first." And I'm really grateful that what I did do was tell her, "Yeah, I'm not going to take that advice." Sometimes people think that if your sponsor gives you a suggestion and you don't take it, run away, don't tell them, hide it, do what you want, right? But what I learned is it's important for me to admit that, like, hey, I hear you, but I'm not gonna follow this suggestion. What else you got for me? And she was able to kind of like tell me how to make sure that I continued with my recovery, that like I protected myself in moving in with some guy, that I had, plans and stuff like that. And so I wish I took her advice, but I'm glad I didn't. All works out, right? Like, we have this beautiful son that we've raised who's 22 years old, and we've been together, but there's a lot of character defects that I had brought into this relationship, that I labeled them as his problems. And it did cause a lot of strife. I don't think that whole wait a year until you start dating is a thing. I think, man, work the steps. Oh, so anyway, I get in this relationship now. It's about baby work, all this stuff, and sponsorship is just more of a verbal thing. Just kind of stuck on the four step, and we end up moving out to Idaho, and I had about 6 years clean. Jumping forward too many years to cover it all. And I instantly went to meetings and felt like they don't do it the same here. I don't belong. They're all cliquey. And I stopped going to meetings regularly. I'd go once in a while to celebrate my husband's clean time, but I wouldn't really stand up for mine because I'm not really working a program. But I was still in contact with my sponsor, and I kept saying, I need to do these steps. I need to do these steps. Luckily, with, like I said, the spiritual principles I was learning, having a connection to the higher power by grace and mercy of my higher power that I choose to call God, no life-lifing me, I was able to stay clean through that. At about 17 years clean, I'm gonna get real. Why I went back to meetings is my husband came home one time and he's like, there's no women with clean time out here. They really need women with clean time. And so this person that thinks so little of himself had this very egotistical thought of, well, I have clean time. And I went to the meeting, and when I sat there, the internal dialogue in my head, because I'd really just been working and spending time with kids, right? Like my son and all of his friends, just doing stuff with them. The internal dialogue got me to realize, fuck, I'm sick. I didn't realize how sick my thoughts were. And I go in there and I feel like such a, what do you call it, an imposter, that I have this clean time, but no recovery, right? I have some. I had a lot of strong foundation, but like I hadn't worked the steps. The best I'd done is stay clean, which was pretty fucking good for my life, let me tell you that much. But, and I went to a meeting within like the first month, and I heard somebody share how it took them over 15 years to work the steps. And my brain went, you're not alone. Even in your failure and recovery, somebody has that experience. And him sharing that he went and worked the steps and what it did for him got me to get a sponsor and start working these fucking steps. I thought because I had told every, I'm an open book and I'll tell you everything I've ever done wrong, that like I've already kind of worked a four step. But that assets part, that was the part that was really hard to look at. And then the truthfulness of my actions, those exact natures of my actions, not just here's the list of all the bad stuff I've ever done. Am I healed? No, it was looking at why I kept doing those things. Because I'll tell you what, some of my biggest regrets by the time I worked my four step is what I had done clean. Because when I was using, I had that justification. Well, I was using, right? But no, I had done some of those similar things in recovery, right? Anyway, I worked the steps and I started learning things like I went into area with like on this high horse of if you were listening to me, you would agree with me because this is common sense, so you must not be listening to me. What I didn't realize is different people have different perspective on things, and I'm definitely one of those. I'm going to fight for the underdog, and if I feel like anybody is being treated bad, I'm going to fight for them. So anybody that was angry or mean, I didn't know how to deal with that. And when I worked on my character defects, that I realized that guy that I was judging because he's so angry at 20 something years clean. My level of control issues and people pleasing were way beyond what he had worked on with his anger issues. But you know that whole "you spot it, you got it." You spot it, you got something. And what it was his anger issues totally fucked with my needing to have everybody be happy and well and everything be smooth. And so my people pleasing just was acting out. And I got to start. So I would also do one of those false humility. I have all the defects in the world, which was not very helpful, right? Because I didn't really believe it. But if I said it, then you couldn't say that I was these things, and I would protect myself. So I really got to start putting pen to paper, listening to sponsors, and doing that stuff. I realized that that I needed the power, a power greater than me, to help deal with these shortcomings, right? Because there was just so much wrong with me. But I could sit there and I could white knuckle it and try not to speak up and tell you what I thought, because I thought that was how to not have control issues, right? Like, I know how to do this. I know. And I'd sit there and I'd be in pain. Right? And so one time my sponsor was sitting next to me, and I jumped up to go and, like, something as simple as go get a knife for people that were getting ready to cut a cake. And she's like, "You try to solve people's problems before they even realize they have them." I'm like, "Isn't that a good thing? That's like, I'm being helpful." And at that time, I felt the feeling that I was experiencing when I was doing that. It wasn't like, "Oh, let me go, they're looking for a knife. Let me go help them." It was this need, this overwhelming, like, feeling inside my gut. And so I started kind of paying attention to those feelings. Yeah, at 17 years clean, I started looking at feelings and realizing that those are a good compass of what's going on in my spiritual state, right? And why I'm doing something. So I got to start working on control issues where I could still be helpful. I could still offer advice, but maybe sit back and relax a little while. I remember the first time that I suppressed that need to get up and go shut a door that was way across the room in a meeting, something so small, but I felt that, like, oh, I got to jump up. We got to close that door because the kids are in the other room playing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, just relax. And the person sitting right next to the door shut it. And I'm like, oh, I don't have to have the whole world and everything on my shoulders. And I got a freedom in that. And things can get done without me. And it's okay to not have to act on those feelings. And so, you know, then there was a time where I was sitting in there and I had done a pretty good job working on my control issues. And I remember everybody was kind of joking with me about it. And this last girl that said it, oh, that's just Jamie and her control issues, had me ready to fucking leave in a fuck this. I don't need this. I don't need these people. Blah, 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 blah. And a thought that came to me that did not seem of my own, so I choose to call it my higher power because it seemed too brilliant, was, okay, we're good on working on your control issues. Let's work on why somebody's opinion of you can wreck your life so much. Because it was going to separate me from the solution, which is Narcotics Anonymous, right? This is where I get to be reminded on a daily basis that I have this disease of addiction. I get to be reminded that we get to grow, heal, and change, and all of that stuff. And you know, the disease tries to find ways to separate me from you guys. The disease being my freaking brain. And I've started working on that. And then all of these things happened in recovery where God has always put in place exactly what I need. About 2 years ago now, I got a I've loved all my sponsors. My pet peeve is when people say I've outgrown my sponsor. I've never outgrown anybody, not one person in this program. The only person I'm trying to outgrow is me yesterday, right? Like, so I didn't fire any of them. I did move on from different sponsors for different reasons. Sometimes it's excitement that makes me grow, and sometimes it's pain. And there's been times, the sponsor before the last, it was excitement. They fueled something in my recovery, their knowledge of the literature, and you know, that's who took me through the full 12 steps. And when I got that done, man, I got to start wrapping up. When I got to the 12th step, it was so funny because my brain said, you know what, maybe you could take a little break for a minute. Then I got to that question about what's your purpose in life or something like that. And I'm like, wow, how selfish, right? I got what I need. I'm out. Peace, y'all. See you later. I'm so much better than I was for working these steps. And I realized, it was just another degree of separation. How lucky are we that we get to be in the trenches, being able to help people learn from our experience? Because I'll tell you what, I cannot learn from somebody whose book telling me how to do something. If a man is telling me, who has no children, how to raise my child, my ears are fucking closed. I'll tell you that much. But if a mother sneaks in that they had experience with their child and this is what they learned and this is what they did, because I don't even like hearing from women on how I should raise my kid and how I'm messing up, but if you tell me your experience, I learn from that. I still stubborn ass addict, I swear. You tell me that we can't do something, I try to find the loophole and all that stuff. But less of that now. Anyway, and so this next sponsor that I got was actually out of pain. The disease of addiction has definitely manifested itself in many areas of my life throughout my 24 years. And I was at a convention in Reno, Nevada, which is a gambling place. And for those of you out of the country, gambling is not legal everywhere. And so this was a place, there were slot machines everywhere. And I was in the grip of addiction. One more, one more, one more. Missing the main speaker, doing all this. And I could feel the addiction just all over me. And I hadn't been in contact with my sponsor. I hadn't been working any steps, barely been making it to meetings. I'm at this convention and I go to the women's meeting. And I hear this woman speak, and my brain goes, ask her to be your sponsor. And I go, I'm going to have to do work. I don't want to do work. I fucking hate work. And so I ignore that thought. And I'm back at the slot machines. One more, one more. And I'm like, fuck, if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? So luckily, that jarring experience was just the being in that ickiness of the disease of addiction. And I asked her to be my sponsor. She gave me an assignment, and that night I did it. And I felt that like thick addiction leave me. Almost like that whoosh. It was, the machines were no longer calling me. I was excited about recovery again instantly. So crazy. And she had me call her every day for 30 days. And that's what I had done in the past. And I fucking love that. Because I needed that. I needed a reset. I needed to recommit to my recovery, and I needed to be a fucking newcomer again. My husband used to call me a newcomer all the time. And I figured when I was 6 years clean and it finally didn't bother me, he was calling me a newcomer. That's when maybe I got out of the newcomer stage. Now I love it when he calls me a newcomer because I am to him. I'm new to him. 24 years clean. But, yeah, so I got the sponsor, and a month after that, my mom had a fall, and with her dementia, she couldn't really remember how to walk anymore, and so she was bedridden. And I have this new sponsor. I'm really excited. I want to go to all these meetings, but now I'm stuck at home because I became her full-time caretaker, and my sponsor got me to try online meetings. And because of my ADD, I had all these reasons why online meetings weren't working for me, why in person was better. And then I started going to these meetings though. And when I went to them regularly, they started feeling more like I was actually in a meeting. Going somewhere once and never returning, even a live meeting, right? Isn't always a good thing. It says we meet regularly. We continue to go to meetings because that's how we get the connection. That's how we get to not just hear somebody's story about how they lost their job, they can't pay their bills, but 2 months later, how they got a job, their bills are paid. Like you get to hear the solution too when you go regularly. And so I started becoming a part of this meeting, and then she told me that I should look at hosting, and I began hosting and became part of. And I was just looking at when I became a host. So I was starting to get to know people, and I became a host. And about 8 days later, my mom passes. So it was like a 5 month thing, me being her caretaker. I was able to jump on that meeting, know people and get the support. And it's like all these things happen in my life and in my recovery. And I choose to call them God, call them coincidence, call them whatever you want, but spiritual awakenings for me. I get to experience these amazing things. And I met these amazing people and got to go out to London and meet people in person, get those hugs. And I've developed true friendships. You know, the fellowship I've gotten from online meetings has just, it's meant the deal, a deal to me. It's been what my recovery needs. You know, what is right for us in one time of our recovery is not right for us in another. And same thing, what one thing I thought wouldn't work for me has been the saving grace. And so I continue to try to be humble and keep an open mind, be able to learn from people and learn that I can grow. My sponsor is helping me to pick out those things in my recovery that I'm doing right, because I love to dwell on what I'm doing wrong. I love to say, oh, I said I was going to go walk every morning and I've failed on that spectacular. She said, well, let's look at what you've done this year. You've quit smoking. You've become of service. You now have an in-person home group that you go to regularly. You are stopped. I stopped playing games on my phone. I would be up till 3 a.m. playing a stupid game on my phone. I have done all of these things in this last year. But I want to see, oh, but I said I was going to walk every day and I'm not doing that. Oh, well, right? Like, I have things that I can still work on, and I will always be working on things. So it's good for me to know exactly where I'm at, but also appreciate how far I've come. And so, you know, I'm in a new round of steps with this new sponsor. I'm really excited. I'm on my fourth step. I want to dig fucking deep this time. I don't want to drag my feet, and I want to get a new perspective. And you know, I guess if I can share anything is, you know, the foundation of this program is in our literature, in these steps. And the fellowship can ebb and flow for me throughout my recovery. And right now the fellowship is showing up for me in ways I've never imagined. I've heard people share about that before. And then I would judge my experience, like, oh, the fellowship showed up for me. They were at my house. They were food trains, all this stuff. And I'm like, that's not my experience. The fellowship has always shown up when I've asked for help, but never this magical source of friendship. And it's just that I hadn't built those. And I'm building that now at 24 years clean. I'm building people that will show up for me. I still might need to let them know I need help, but anyway, I think God shut me down, or the timer is. I don't know. There's no timer here. But I hope some of that made some sense. If anything, some of my friends got to know me a little bit better. And if you're sitting here getting nothing out of this, I've been there. I've been there. I've been to the best meetings and not gotten anything out of it because of my own spiritual state. And I've been to some meetings where there's a bit of mess shared, and I've gotten powerful messages. So encourage you to look at what area you may need to work on in your life. And I'm going to work on not thinking the rest of the day if I did a good job or a bad job. I did my job. I showed up. I shared my experience, strength, and hope, my truth. That's all I got. So thank you, guys.